Welcome to Between the Rows, where you get to hear the stories behind the stories in Canada's leading farm publications.
Hi, I'm Robert Arneson of The Western Producer. Welcome to another edition of Between the Rows. First up on today's show, Justin Trudeau is still the Prime Minister of Canada, even though his party didn't win a single seat between Winnipeg and the west coast of British Columbia. David Frazier, a reporter with Glacier Farm Media in Ottawa, joins us to talk about Monday's federal election and what it all means for Canadian farmers. Hey, David.
Hey there, how are you doing?
Thanks for coming on the show. So what was your initial reaction to the Liberals' win? What went through your mind?
Well, it wasn't altogether surprising because we saw quite a few polls showing that we were going to end up with a Liberal minority. I think what was surprising for me and likely other Canadians was the strong message that was seen from Western Canada, as you pointed out in the intro there, of not a single Liberal being sent to Ottawa in a pretty large swath of the country there. I think it's fairly significant. And while the Liberals weren't projected to do great in Western Canada, I don't think many people expected them to do that poorly.
So part of the story here as well is that the Conservatives won 34.4% of the popular vote. That's more than the 33.1% for the Liberals. But of course, we all know the Tories lost by about 36 seats. I guess the question is, you know, will Western Canadians and folks on the prairies kind of accept that result? Or are they going to hold this in the back of their minds for quite a while and hold a grudge about this issue?
Yeah, I think there will be a grudge. And first of all, I think this speaks to a flaw in our electoral system and the need to reform it. We saw the Liberals pledge to do that in 2015. They didn't. And here we have again a result in our election where people are looking at it and going, that doesn't make any sense that the popular vote should have sent one party to form government. And that didn't happen. On terms of the grudge, I don't think that's going to go away until Trudeau exits the Prime Minister's office. I think, again, the results seen in Western Canada is a clear indication of how truly disliked Justin Trudeau is in that part of the country. And Conservative premiers such as Saskatchewan Premier Scott Moe and Jason Kenney in Alberta, they recognize that and they will continue to stoke that national division, that sentiment, because it works to their advantage. So I don't think that grudge is going to go away. And I think Justin Trudeau has a really big challenge to overcome this big dislike for him in that part of the country.
So one big question here is, you know, what does this mean for Canadian agriculture? And I guess, you know, who's going to represent Western Canadian farmers in Ottawa? I mean, how do you think this plays out?
Cool. That's another big challenge. I mean, just speaking with industry groups today, it sounds like there's a little bit of a wait and see approach to see who are going to be the new power players within this new Liberal minority government that will presumably have some support from the NDP or the Bloc or a combination of those two parties. The Liberals are probably going to continue to do what they've been doing on this file, and there is some industry support for that, notably with a reform for business risk management programs. Of course, every political party committed to some degree to review those programs. The Liberals will continue to do that. I think there's general consensus amongst each of the political parties that ran in this election that there needs to be more market access internationally and more stable market access internationally. And the Liberals will continue to explore that and surely have some support from industry in making that happen. In terms of not having a seat or not having representation from Western Canada, I think we have to wait and see what that's going to look like. I think a lot of Canadians noted, or especially in Western Canada, noted Ralph Goodale, a longtime Regina Wascana member of parliament, losing his seat after holding it for 26 years. This is a guy who very well understands the agricultural industry. I think most people within the industry speak highly of him and recognize that he is a voice for farmers and also was a very influential member of Justin Trudeau's government. He's not there anymore. So the impact of losing that voice will be something to watch closely over the next few months here.
So, as you said, the Ralph Goodale loss, you know, was a big talking point during the election night. So, you know, Mr. Goodale has, you know, survived challenges in the past and gone on to be elected, as you said, many times. You know, what was different about this election?
Well, there is a few things. Again, going back to the point of just how disliked Justin Trudeau is in Saskatchewan and Alberta, that definitely played a factor that impacted the amount of people who wanted to rally behind Trudeau or rally behind Goodale, and that hurt him. But there was also a concentrated effort to get him kicked out. There was a very well-funded billboard campaign in Regina targeting that riding because it was identified as a big one, that if the conservatives took it, it would be symbolic and it would truly send a message to Justin Trudeau. That's exactly what happened. And just going back to my last point, I think it says something fairly significant about where people in Western Canada's heads are at, where voters in Regina, Wascana were willing to essentially trade a well-respected, longtime, influential member of a governing cabinet for the conservative candidate who will likely sit in the backbenches of an opposition party. So I think that's fairly significant.
All right. Well, thanks, David. I've been speaking with David Fraser, a reporter with Glacier Farm Media in Ottawa. Also here to talk about the election result is Carlo Dade, director of the Trade and Investment Center at the Canada West Foundation. Carlo joins us from Calgary. Hi, Carlo.
Afternoon.
So what was your initial reaction to the results?
Was, I think, about what everyone expected. Most of the polling and most of the analysis, the talking heads, were all pointing towards a minority government. You know, there were some minor surprises. The Bloc doing as well as it did, not that it did well was a surprise, but that it did so well was a bit of a surprise. Greens not picking up more in Eastern Canada. But, you know, there was the usual small surprises in a result that was pretty much expected.
So, obviously, one of the big stories of 2019 has been the issue of trade and what's going on with China and how this is all affecting Canadian agriculture. Does this election result change anything when it comes to the government's approach to China, or are we expecting the status quo? What do you think is going to happen next?
Well, you know, you're absolutely right. This is a major issue. If you look at the impact on our exports and our trade, 60-some percent of Canada's GDP comes from trade, close to a third of our GDP comes from exports. So you're right, it's absolutely a critical issue, especially for us out west. But you wouldn't know that from the campaign, eh? You remember Soy Canada issued a broadside saying, where the heck is agriculture in the election, in terms of words and statements coming from the leaders. We did have the ag debate that Kelsey Johnson hosted for CFA, Canadian Federation of Ag, but we really didn't see much on agriculture, and we didn't see much on trade. So without the entrance of new evidence or new facts being introduced, either in the platforms or during debates or statements, you're left with thinking that the status quo is going to continue.
So obviously there are some folks in Western Canada who are frustrated, others who are extremely frustrated with the situation with China, and of course also frustrated that we can't sell more ag commodities to Europe. But we don't have any people who are MPs in the governing party right now. So, I mean, that creates a situation where people could even become, I guess, more resentful, more angry about the situation. How do you see this playing out over the next 6 months to a year?
I see that as one potential path, but I think any responsible government, and say what you like about the current government, I'm sure I and everyone else have said plenty, but they are a professional, responsible national government, so they are going to have to deal with the part of the country from which they did not have representation, and they're going to have to deal with agriculture in the West and protecting our exports and thinking through stronger policies to deal with this. Now, if you step back to the previous iteration of this government, they actually came in with a pretty good hand on agriculture. They had the infamous report by our now ambassador to China, Dominique Barton, the former head of McKinsey Global Consulting, that identified agri-food as a key industry, key sector for Canada, and the goal to increase exports. So you can hope that the second time around, they actually try and work out or flesh out more of the policies that are needed to realize that vision. So it's not as if we have a government and we have nothing with which to work. The government did a few good things in terms of setting policies and setting priorities. The trick is going back and actually fleshing it out and actually thinking through some of the tougher policy choices with how we achieve those goals. So you can look on this as, you know, there's something there. There's something there to work on with this government.
So it sounds like you have some sense of optimism that things could work out for Western Canada and Western Canadian farmers.
I don't necessarily say optimism, but I would just be taking the emotion out of it and the analysis. There is something there. There is a good basis. The question is, and where I have neither optimism nor pessimism, is whether or not the government will actually be able to pick it up and think through and follow through. If you think about our engagement, say, with Asia, not just China, but the broader Asian region, the Pacific Rim or the Indo-Pacific, whatever you call it, you know, there's also a real need, and there has been a need for years, for governments to have a unified Canadian long-term Asia-Pacific, Indo-Pacific strategy. We haven't had one from the government, and I'm less optimistic, if you want to use the word optimism, that we'll get a Asia strategy out of this government. On ag, I think, you know, you have the basis. They already have the strategy. It's more a question of execution. So for ag exporters, you don't have everything that you need, but at least you've got the potential, let me stress potential, to have the government actually try and better operationalize, and the key word better operationalize, the strategy that they've laid out. Yeah, hey, if I could get one more thing in, you know, the key thing I think is for the ag community to get on the government about operationalizing. The ag community can't sit back and hope that this happens, but you've got something upon which to fixate and focus. That is, okay, we'll take your strategy. Now we are going to watch you day and night to make sure the implementation is there, that you're thinking things through. So the focus, I think, is something very, very, very specific in the case of ag exporters, and that is execution of the strategy.
All right. Well, thanks, Carlo. I've been speaking with Carlo Dade of the Canada West Foundation about the federal election results. This is Between the Rows. I'm your host, Robert Arneson. Next up, 2019 was a comeback year for barley, as the crop nearly reached 7.5 million acres across Canada. More growers are turning to barley, or returning to barley, thanks to new varieties and new opportunities in the market. Here now is Jeff Melcher, a freelance writer based in Alberta. Jeff wrote about the resurgence of barley in a recent issue of the Alberta Farmer Express. Jeff joins us from Didsbury, Alberta. Hi, Jeff.
Hi, how are you doing?
So thanks for coming on Between the Rows. So can you describe what's happening with barley right now? Is it making a comeback?
Well, when it turns to seeded acreage, it certainly is. As you mentioned, this year, the seeded acres across Canada amounted to 7.4 million acres, and that's up quite a bit from 2017 when it kind of bottomed out at 5.8 million. So it is showing sign of more interest among producers. That kind of dropped off for a little while there.
So are growers feeling more positive and enthusiastic about barley right now?
Well, by the acreage, I think they certainly are. This year we've seen an uptick to 7.4 million acres versus 5 million seeded acres in 2017. And I think that comes from a little more awareness of that there actually is research going on out there. Now, the big varieties right now are AC Metcalf and CDC Copeland. And they've been around for a long time. I think around about, just approximately like 20 years.
Right.
And the reason for that is mainly because the maltsters like them a lot. They meet their specifications, and it's kind of a history bound thing too. The maltsters, they tend to stick with when they find a variety they like that meets their specs, they kind of stick with it for a long time.
Do you feel that there is potential going forward for more growth, more interest in barley? Is there sort of like a buzz, so to speak, building around this crop?
Now, as far as if there's a buzz, that's kind of hard to say. I think the story is more based on, that it kind of poses the question more than it actually, more than we actually answer it. So, basically, we went to people like Aaron Beatty and Jason Lenz,
right,
who, of course, is a producer in Alberta, and basically asked them that question. And they kind of gave their perspective. From as far as whether there's an industry buzz, that's basically, as far as I know. I mean,
yep,
there's people a lot more qualified to talk about this than myself.
Yep.
But, simply based on acreage alone, it's at least showing some positive signs of improvement.
Okay.
And there's the fact that too, that China still likes likes malt barley. Likes our malting barley, but that's what happened in canola.
Right.
They have to seek out new markets to maintain that kind of momentum.
Thanks, Jeff. That was Jeff Melcher, a freelance writer in Alberta, talking about barley's comeback in Western Canada. Now joining us to talk about new varieties of barley is Aaron Beatty, a barley and oat breeder at the Crop Development Center at the University of Saskatchewan. Aaron joins us from Saskatoon. Hi, Aaron.
Hey, Robert. How's it going?
Thanks for coming on Between the Rows. So when it comes to malt barley, a couple of varieties have dominated in Western Canada for, I guess, about 20 years. Why is that? Why has that happened?
Probably the main reason is that Canada's barley that we produce is fairly unique in the world. It hits a really high spec in terms of quality. So when customers around the world are buying Canadian barley, they're oftentimes blending it with malting barley from different parts of the world that doesn't have quite as high a quality. So customers that are already buying Canadian barley really rely on it as sort of a stopgap for lower quality that they blend with. So customers become a little bit hesitant to change their input supply there. So it kind of gets us into a tough position in Canada that it takes us a bit longer to convince end users and brewers that they should be changing varieties without really affecting their business.
So I guess the consequence of that is that growers are stuck using varieties that were developed, you know, 25, 30 years ago, or it's that, and then obviously they're behind other crops in terms of yield, disease resistance, and other desirable traits, right?
Absolutely, yeah. Since probably about 1980, I would say we've gone through two of these long-term cycles where one or two varieties have dominated the malting industry in Canada. So we had Harrington that dominated throughout the 80s and 90s, and now Metcalf and Copeland throughout the since the 2000s, basically. So, yep. And because of that, you're right. The progress that actually has been going on in the barley breeding programs in terms of improvements to yield, disease resistance, even lodging resistance, the growers aren't really seeing those benefits because they have been stuck with these old varieties. So barley kind of gets painted as being, you know, sort of a crop where there's not a lot of progress going on, but actually that's not the case at all.
So let's just talk about that for a second. So I understand there are some newer varieties on the market. Do some of these perhaps have a chance to knock off the old favorites?
I think so. I think there is that's the general feeling right now in industry. There's a sense of the change is imminent here, and probably what we're seeing right now is that between Metcalf and Copeland, the acres of Metcalf are starting to drop off, and that's coming that's coming because these new varieties are taking over for Metcalf. So we've got varieties right now like Synergy, which are taking up a little bit more significant acreage at the expense of Metcalf. And right behind Synergy, we have some other ones like Connect and Bow and Fraser, which will probably also eat into those Metcalf acres going down the road. So I think we are at that point where we will see some change. And probably in the next 5 years, we'll probably see that happening with Copeland as well.
So what's the appeal of these new varieties? Is it simply yield, or are there other benefits as well?
It's a combination. I'd say all of them have a much higher yield than Metcalf or Copeland, at least 10% higher. So all the new varieties have kind of gotten into that that range for improvement. And then after that, there's some differences between the varieties. So something like Bow has already shown itself to have really excellent lodging resistance. So that's quite attractive in some parts of the prairies where that is a more common issue. And then, you know, varieties like Fraser and Connect and Synergy as well. They also have some very good improvements in disease resistance, with Fraser and Connect also having some big improvements on FHB resistance there. So yeah, they all sort of have a combination of at least two major areas of improvement over the old varieties.
Okay, so just shifting here to feed barley, what new traits are needed in feed barley varieties?
With the feeds, we tend to primarily focus on yield and standability or lodging resistance, and that's always been the case. And so we continue to work on those. But in addition to that, we are also obviously trying for some better disease resistance, as well as trying to keep that protein level above where we would typically be looking at for the malt varieties there. So right now, Austinson is still dominating the feed acres, and it was a fairly significant improvement for yield, good standability, and some very nice sort of test weight plumpness. So it's taken a little while to come up with some varieties that would be better than that, but there are some starting to show up on the market right now. Claymore is a line that Nutrien's supporting, and it comes out of a U.S. breeding program. And So we're still waiting to see how it really shakes out versus Austinson, but it did look promising coming through the testing system.
Okay. One more question here. I know that you're a barley breeder, not a market analyst, but are there signs that there is growing demand out there for barley, whether it be feed or malt barley, domestically and through exports?
Yes. From what I've been hearing from people more involved with that and some of the line companies and the maltsters, I'd say on both areas, there's reason for optimism. I mean, domestically, or if we think of North America as a unit here, I think there has been a lot more barley being bought for malting, primarily due to the craft industry, which tends to use a lot more malt per barrel of beer that they produce. So that in and of itself has been an increase in the amount of malt usage. And that's something that it's not just the small craft brewers that are doing that now. Some of the larger brewers have developed a range of products that would also fall into that category. So it's now kind of spanning the entire cross-section of brewers in North America. And then, you know, China's been a strong export market for us in the last, 5, 10 years. They're our primary customer now. And more recently, we've been seeing more feed barley being exported to China. So, you know, it's early, probably early days in terms of trying to predict whether that's going to maintain itself as a constant. But barring any sort of trade related issues that we've seen with canola, you know, the barley market has been very strong there, and the fact that China hasn't placed some kind of barrier to exporting barley to them, I think is also a positive sign that perhaps it's something critical to them that they can't maybe work in that area of trying to prevent it from coming into the country.
All right. Well, thanks, Aaron. That was Aaron Beatty, a barley and oat breeder at the Crop Development Center at the University of Saskatchewan. Thanks for coming on the show, Aaron.
All right. Thanks, Robert.
With snow, cold, rain, and mud, this fall has been a difficult harvest across Western Canada. One crop still in the field is sunflowers, which are mostly grown in Manitoba. Joining us to talk about sunflowers and other news from the commodity markets is Marlo Glass, a reporter with Glacier Markets Farm. Hi, Marlo.
Hi.
Thanks for coming on Between the Rows.
Oh, thank you for having me.
So what's happening with the sunflower harvest right now?
Well, as you mentioned, there's been a lot of really challenging weather in the prairies over the last month or so. Sunflowers, traditionally being a crop that's harvested later in the season, has really kind of felt that pressure. And so the sunflower harvest is going to be late, even later than normal. But how late it will be depends really on the region and how much precipitation and kind of inclement weather that region has received. So in some places in Manitoba, the harvest won't start for another month now, which means that frost is then going to become a pretty significant factor. In some really wet areas, they're saying that they're going to have to wait for the ground to freeze just so that combines don't get stuck. And then one expert that I spoke to said that 10 to 15% of Manitoba's sunflower crop may be lost just due to these challenging late season conditions.
So keeping the crop over the winter and harvesting in the spring is not really an option?
It doesn't sound like an option, no, based on who I spoke to, because he said that, because of course, when you think about a sunflower, it's such a tall crop. Whenever you get like kind of snow or anything pushing it down, you can't, it doesn't really pop back up again. And so then it's almost impossible to harvest.
Okay. So a lot of struggles with sunflowers. What's happening with some of the other crops in Western Canada? Is there some people making progress?
Yeah, definitely. Harvest kind of keeps chugging along. In Alberta, about 59% of the harvest is complete across the province. And that breaks down to 63% of spring wheat, 70% of barley, and 42% of canola. Alberta is kind of the latest with their harvest. In Saskatchewan, the harvest is almost 70% complete. And on a crop-by-crop basis, that shows 66% of spring wheat, 83% of barley, and 58% of canola. And now here in Manitoba, despite the storm we got over Thanksgiving, we actually are the furthest along with our harvest progress. As of last week, our harvest was 74% complete. Spring wheat is almost totally off the fields, and canola is 80% harvested. Even though that's the quickest rate across the prairies, it's still quite significantly behind kind of the average rate of harvest.
Right. And I guess in Manitoba, the other crop would be soybeans. There's still a lot of soybeans in
yes.
the fields.
Yep.
Okay.
Considerably.
So there's still hope here to get the majority of the crop off. So that's positive
yeah.
news. So as well, last week, Agriculture Canada came out with its October outlook, and it sort of estimated canola production around 19.4 million tons. That's above the five-year average, which is somewhat surprising given that a lot of that canola is not in the bin yet.
Right.
And we've had a lot of difficult conditions the last little while here. Was the sort of market surprised? Were analysts surprised by that number?
The market wasn't surprised because analysts are actually waiting for the December production survey. That's when we're going to get a really clear picture of, you know, how much canola actually came off the fields in good condition. That 19.4 million number, that's the original Statistics Canada prediction from earlier in the year. And so they don't revise that until December. So the fact that they published that 19.4 is not surprising because it's just too soon to tell at this point. We do expect to see that number revised lower in December, but how much lower, of course, remains to be seen.
So based on your best guess, are you assuming right now that that number is going to be quite a bit lower come December, or what are you thinking?
We're thinking it's going to be lower, yeah.
Okay, just because of a lot of perhaps part of the crop could not may not be harvested.
Right, right. But many experts that I've spoken to, they seem to think that, you know, like when it's all said and done and comes out in the wash, it might not be quite as like doom and gloom as the weather forecasts might lead us to think.
Okay, that's good news. So what else are you watching for in the markets over the next week or so?
Well, last week, Canadian canola producers, they made record deliveries to commercial outposts. And so they delivered just over 719,000 tons of canola to commercial positions. And now that is nearly double double the amount of canola that is typically delivered. And so that was something that was kind of a shock to the market in that it really kind of kept a lid on prices. After we had that snow, I think kind of the general market sentiment, people expected to see a weather premium back in prices. And then there was this kind of very, very large delivery. And we think that was probably because the rain and snow were keeping producers off of fields, right? So then they made these grain deliveries instead. But that really put pressure on the market. Looking forward, perhaps a bit more long term, all is still really quiet when it comes to negotiations between Canada and China. And so, of course, the market is always keeping an eye on any developments there, because currently there's no indication that China will be purchasing our canola anytime soon.
All right. Well, thanks, Marlo. I've been speaking with Marlo Glass, a reporter with Glacier Markets Farm.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks for coming on the show. That's it for today's show. I'm Robert Arneson of The Western Producer. Thanks for listening.
Between the Rows is a production of Glacier Farm Media, Canada's leading farm publisher. We'd love to hear what you think of the show and invite you to send your comments to btr@farmmedia.com or visit us at membersgetmore.ca and sign up today.